everyone, and welcome to the To Quote Buffy podcast. I'm Amanda.
And I'm Jeremiah.
And today we're talking about Innocence.
Innocence, yay!
Hooray! So this is the second part of Surprise that we talked about last time. So we're going to find out all of the good stuff that happens in this one. And this is probably going to be a long one. So stick around, get some popcorn, coffee, or tea if you're into that sort of thing like Giles. I have two promos that I'm going to play for you guys that I found on YouTube, and then we'll jump right into the summary. So here is the first one.
Tomorrow night is New Tuesday, and our two-night event continues as Buffy moves to a new night and time, 8, 7 Central and Mountain.
Buffy!
The night of passion that Buffy has shared with Angel will unleash a horror no one has ever known.
People are going to die.
And tomorrow, someone she trusts will turn on her.
I know what I have to do.
Everything will change.
Things are about to get very interesting.
Joss Whedon's Buffy the Vampire Slayer at its new earlier time.
Ooh, that gives me goosebumps.
Yeah, me too.
That's a good promo. And then here is the second one. I think it aired the same night as the show.
Tonight on Buffy, nothing will ever be the same.
Things are about to get very interesting.
Someone Buffy knows, someone she trusts, is going to turn on her.
No!
Buffy the Vampire Slayer, tonight on the WB.
Who could it be?
So dramatic, I'm worried.
I know, me too. Okay, so we'll jump right into the summary, and then we're going to find out who's going to turn on her. So this episode begins with Spike and Drew in the factory while the judge is gathering strength. Spike tells them that they should really be getting out of town now that Buffy and Angel know where they are, when suddenly Drusilla has a vision, and she starts laughing. Silently, but maniacally. Back at Angel's, Buffy wakes to find that he's gone. And he's actually out in the alley, still in considerable amounts of pain, and is completely panicking as he realizes what's happening. There's also a woman in the alley, and she asks if he's okay. He tells her that he's fine and stands, and then he grabs her, and he freaking kills her by drinking her blood. What?
Shocking.
This is not the Angel that we know and love, folks. So Buffy makes her way home the next morning, and to take a shower, she needs to change, and Joyce asks her if she had fun at Willow's, and asks her if she's okay, because she doesn't say different, she just says she looks, but that's kind of what she's getting at. At the library, the rest of the Scoobies are worried because they haven't heard from Buffy or Angel, and Xander and Willow rush off to the factory to find her, but before they can leave, Buffy comes in asking after Angel, who has not checked in. Buffy leaves, and Willow follows with Jenny lurking closely behind. Back at the factory, Angel arrives. Spike and Drew are on edge, not knowing that he is Angelus once again. The judge tries burning him, but nothing happens, and he tells them that Angel has no humanity. And the two of them are completely amazed and happy that he has once again returned to his former evil self. Drusilla dances in celebration, and they invite Angel to help them destroy the world. He asks them to hold off for a day while he tries to get revenge on Buffy. And Spike realizes that he really means to make Buffy suffer. And Angel tells him that she made him feel like a human, and that's not something that you can just forgive. Back at the library, the others are still searching for a way to destroy the judge when Buffy calls to check in, still not having heard from Angel, and checking all of the usual places, even beating up Willy a couple of times. Xander apologizes for snapping at Cordelia earlier, and the two of them kiss, only to be seen by Willow, who is completely upset and runs out of the library. Xander follows her, trying to explain, but Willow doesn't want to leave, or she doesn't want to hear it, and she leaves. So everybody's secrets are out in the open, folks. Nothing's getting past anybody this time. So Buffy starts to go home, and she stops only to head back to Angel's apartment and find him there. And she tries to talk to him, and he says several cruel, hurtful things about the previous night with the intention of emotionally breaking her. Buffy is upset by the change in his behavior, but Angelus leaves with a cliche remark about calling her. Buffy is heartbroken. Jenny visits her uncle Enyos and tries to get more information. He informs her that it's too late and that Angel's suffering has ended and that his soul is gone. Willow returns to the library later, confronted again by Xander, and she tells him that she went home for a while. Things are not okay between them, but what's happening right now is more important. And she asks if they've made any progress. He tells her no, but he develops a plan. Before he can let her in on the plan, the lights go out and Angel shows up. It's dark, we can't really see his features, and he tells them that he has something to show them and asks Xander to go get the other and urges Willow to come towards him. Xander leaves to get the others and Willow starts towards him only to be stopped by Jenny, who's holding a big wooden cross. Willow isn't quick enough though, and he grabs her by the neck, ready to kill her. Xander is suspicious and heads back to where Willow was to see that she is in danger. Buffy shows up, tries to reason with Angel, but it doesn't work. Xander takes the cross from Jenny and is able to get around Angelus and shoves it in his face, making him drop Willow. He grabs Buffy and kisses her with force, saying that things are going to get interesting. He leaves, leaving Buffy completely devastated, realizing that Angel is gone. Back at the library, everyone is discussing what to do next, while Buffy is distant and quiet. Giles wonders what triggered the transformation as Buffy realizes that it was having sex with Angel that made him change. She's completely overwhelmed by what's happening. She leaves in distress as Willow then realizes what happened. Xander tells them that he has a plan and that he needs Cordelia and Oz's van to pull it off. Jenny and Willow decide that Buffy should just be left alone for the night, and the others agree. Back at the factory, Spike is chiding Angel for not killing Buffy, and Drusilla tells him that he wants to torture Buffy like he did to her. Spike's still not happy and tells him that she better not get in the way. Angel tells him that force won't work in killing her and that to kill her, you have to love her. Buffy returns home and sees the cross from Angel and the clotter ring on her finger and is unable to hold herself together. She collapses on the bed. She's sobbing uncontrollably, and just watching it is heartbreaking. As she sleeps, she dreams of the previous night, and then the dream switches to a graveyard in the daylight. Angel gives her a cryptic message as Buffy turns to see Jenny lifting a black veil. Buffy wakes and realizes that Jenny knows more than she's letting on. The next morning, Buffy is furious and confronts Jenny by slamming her on the desk by the throat in front of a class full of students, no less. That's a great scene. It really is.
Love it.
As Buffy demands to know what she knows, Giles tries to stop her, telling her that she just can't go around accusing everyone. But Jenny interjects, saying that she was sent to Sunnydale to watch Buffy and to keep her and Angel apart. Giles and Buffy are both shocked, understandably, and she tells them that she is part of the Kaldarosh people who originally cursed Angel. She tells them that the curse was broken the moment the Angel achieved true happiness, and Buffy realizes that it was indeed her, and Giles realizes that the two of them made love, which is what caused the transformation. Buffy tells her to curse him again, and she says that it can't be done because those magics are long lost to her people. Buffy demands that Jenny take her to someone who can help. Back at Enyos' apartment, Angel pays him a visit, killing him, knowing that Buffy will seek him out for another curse. That night, Oz drives Willow, Cordelia, and Xander to a military base. Xander and Cordelia tell Willow and Oz to wait for them to drop a box from the window, and they attempt to sneak in only to be caught by a guard. Xander tells him he wants to take Cordelia to see the guns to get her all hot and bothered. After Xander tells him if he doesn't let him in, he will tell the guard's superior that he's not regulation. Reluctantly, the guard agrees to let them in. Once inside, he tells her that he remembers everything from when he was turned into a soldier on Halloween. In the van, Willow asks Oz to make out with her. Oz declines, saying that during class, he fantasizes about kissing her, but she only wants to kiss him to make Xander jealous and that he can wait to kiss her until she's ready to kiss him. He then leaves the van to help Cordelia and Xander. This makes Willow's feelings for Oz grow, obviously. It made my feelings for Oz grow as well. Buffy, Giles, and Jenny arrive at Enyos' apartment to find that Angel has killed him, and on the wall in blood is written, "Was it good for you too?" Giles tells her that Angel is only trying to make things harder for her, but Buffy tells him that he's only making it easier, and she knows that she has to kill him. Back at the factory, The judge, Drusilla, Angel, and several minions are getting ready to head out to cause devastation somewhere in Sunnydale, leaving Spike and his wheelchair behind. In the library, Xander gives Buffy the box and tells her he will show her how to use it. Jenny asks if she can help, and Buffy tells her to leave. They head to the factory, only to find it empty, and Oz tells them he might know where they're going since the bronze is closed. Angelus and the others arrive at the Sunnydale Mall to find it filled with people. They seal off all of the exits, but Buffy and the others arrive just in time as the judge starts to burn everyone inside. Buffy shoots him in the chest with an arrow to distract him, and he tells her that no weapon forged can kill him. Buffy tells him that things have changed, and she pulls out a freaking rocket launcher from inside the box that Xander gave her. Angelus and Drusilla realize what's about to happen and get the hell out of Dodge. She shoots the rocket launcher at him, blowing him to pieces, and Drusilla freaks out and bolts. Angelus also takes off. Buffy tells the others to pick up the pieces and keep them separate. The sprinklers go off, and she goes after Angelus. He finds her first, gets the jump on her, and he basically just cuts her down again by telling her that it was the worst, pretending that he still loved her, and that if he would have known she would have given it up, he wouldn't have bothered. The two of them fight, and Buffy is able to eventually overpower him, and she pulls out a stake as they both realize that she can't kill him, so she kicks him in the groin and tells him to give her time before she leaves. Giles drives a devastated and heartbroken Buffy home. She tells him that he must be disappointed, but he tells her that although she acted rash, that she will only get his love and respect, which makes her cry. He tells her that he has no doubt that they loved each other, but warns her that the next few months are going to be difficult. Inside, Buffy and Joyce are watching an old movie for her birthday. Joyce brings out two cupcakes, and one has a candle in it. Joyce asks what she did for her birthday, to which Buffy replies, got older. And Joyce tells her to make a wish, and Buffy tells her that she's just going to let it burn and leans into her mother's arm, and we end the episode.
Amazing summary there.
Thank you.
Huge episode.
Yes, it really was. That, like, the summary would have been 8 pages, but I had to tone it back. There was so much I wanted to make sure that I got in.
Yeah, there is a lot to cover, so forgive us everyone if we are a little scattered on this one. There's just so much that we need to, you know, cram in, but we will try our best to stay on track.
Yes. So, likes and dislikes, you want me to go first?
Sure.
Okay. So, likes, again, the whole freaking episode. The exchange between Willow and Xander in the hallway, and even when she comes back again, I like the second exchange and how she's like, we're not okay, but I need to be here for reasons. And then the scene between Giles and Buffy at the end, I love how Giles didn't talk down to her for realizing that she had sex. Like, any parent would be like, what are you doing having sex in the first place? But he didn't do that, and I thought that that was really great of him. I also like how mad Spike gets at Angel, not understanding how Buffy could still pose a threat. Because if you think about it, Angel or Spike has tried to kill Buffy countless times at this point.
Yeah.
And she always is able to thwart his plans. And Angel comes in thinking that he knows exactly how to do it and, you know, that he's going to really get under her skin. And I think Spike knows from the get-go that it's not going to go down how Angel thinks.
Absolutely, yeah.
Yeah. And then some of the things that I disliked in this episode was, so Angel smokes now, apparently, because that's a key indicator that he's now a bad guy, because all the bad guys smoke in the 90s.
Not a fan of smoking, folks.
And then how Xander is so dismissive of Willow after she finds out about him and Cordelia.
Yeah, Xander is just awful.
He's not great in this episode.
No, definitely not a highlight for him.
No. So those were mine. What did you have?
Likes, I had, pretty much the same likes. Awesome character development. I think most of the characters had their individual, just awesome, awesome moments.
Yeah.
Some good development for almost everyone. The music was wonderful in this one.
Yeah.
Sarah Michelle Gellar. Oh, I love her.
Me too.
Probably some of, or maybe the best work so far, I think, for her.
Oh, for sure.
It's a good jumping off point of what's to come.
Yes.
And what else? Oh, freaking rocket launcher. Yay!
Yeah.
As far as dislikes, there's a couple of plot issues that just don't make sense to me. You know, the whole gypsy curse, the judge who, it's kind of weird. I like the judge overall, but only as long as I don't think about it too much. I don't get the whole no weapons forged thing, you know, can defeat him. It just doesn't make sense to me because he was kind of defeated, right? I mean,
yeah,
for 400.
He was in boxes. Yeah.
So, yeah, I mean, worst case scenario. So if Buffy doesn't use the rocket launcher and they need to defeat him, worst case scenario is that they chop him up for a couple hundred years. That's not a bad situation.
No.
Like, yeah, chop him up, put him in a box, boxes, and we won't worry about it. We'll be long dead before he becomes a problem again.
The others will probably still be around.
Well, and it's weird because there are other monsters, demons that, I mean, they don't technically kill. I mean, they kind of banish. I mean, Catherine Madison, she ends up in the statue. They're not worried about it.
Yeah. Do they know she's in there, though?
Good question. Maybe they don't.
Yeah, they might not know that she's there.
Poor, what a terrifying life.
True.
That she had infinity stuck in the statue. Ugh.
Yeah. Not a life I'd want.
Boo to that. We're going to go firm on the no being trapped in a statue for infinity. That's a firm check mark in the boo category for us.
We're going to see Amy again soon, though, so that's exciting.
Hooray! They really should have used her a lot more.
I agree.
What else? Oh, okay. So now there is a freaking military base in Sunnydale. Yes, that is in my dislikes because I'm just over this town.
I knew that you were going to say that.
A freaking military base.
We should just add a section for in our notes about like every time a new thing gets added to Sunnydale that Xander really undersold it.
Yeah, they have a military base and I have a burnt down McDonald's. Life is so unfair.
I can't believe there is no military base. There's not even like a reserve place.
There's an office where they recruit people and they make them do jumping jacks in the parking lot. That's about it.
I'm looking right now.
So yeah, not a ton that I dislike, but some things that just stuck out. There's also a couple moments of overall, I love the dialogue in this. The script is amazing. There are a couple of just clunky moments that, I don't know, it takes me out of the episode.
Ooh, you tell.
So we have, and they both involve Giles. Yeah, I just don't get it. He mentions to, one of them is when they find the uncle, bad stereotype, murdered in the hotel room, apartment, wherever he's staying, and you see on the wall that Angelus has written, was it good for you too? Is that right?
Yep.
Was it good for you too? And so Buffy and Giles are looking at it and Giles says, you know, he's doing this deliberately, Buffy. It's like, really?
No, really?
It's like, if he's not, then I don't know. He has a particular artistic flair for his murder. He's able just to form words on the wall. Or there's like a B storyline that we don't know about, of like a sex shaming poltergeist is just suddenly appears.
Okay, so we're gonna go with the first part about like him writing it on the wall as he's dying, and then he goes to be the subway ghost. In Ghost.
That would actually be perfect. So yeah, it is the Uncle Bad Stereotype, his last slap in the face to Buffy is he has to write something snarky on the wall. And then he goes to his spinoff movie and
he teaches
Patrick Swayze how to kick a can in the subway.
Oh, sequel.
Yeah, you may know it as the movie Ghost. I like to think of it as Uncle Enyos.
I thought you were going to say Uncle Bad Stereotype again.
Uncle Bad Stereotype or Surprise Innocence
Ghost.
Ghost. It's a trilogy now.
I love it.
That actually makes his character a little more interesting.
It does. I'll never watch, not that I watch Ghost often, but I mean, the next time I happen to catch it on TV, I'll stick around for Subway Ghost.
Yeah, I don't get the love for that movie. Like,
I don't either.
It just scares me. Like the creatures, the shadows coming out.
Yeah.
Like,
wait.
I was always terrified as a child of the creatures.
They were very disturbing.
And the scene where he's like, get off of my train. So, and he looks like totally insane.
He does look insane. Did he also teach Patrick Swayze how to push the penny, or did he learn that on his own?
He may have.
I don't remember. I know he told him how to kick the can. So my husband and I were having a conversation about the Subway Ghost at lunch the other day, because we were talking about this episode, and he said that when this movie came out, his mom took him to the theater to see it. And he's like, how awkward is it sitting in a theater with your mother watching Ghost?
Oh man.
And he's like, well, she couldn't have known, you know, about the pottery scene.
Ugh, creepy uncle. Yeah. At least he's helpful to someone.
That's true. He may not have been helpful to anyone in this, but as a ghost.
Maybe he just hates women.
Oh, that could be.
He has issues with Jenny, issues with Buffy. Likes Patrick Swayze eventually.
Get off my train.
Yeah, that's what we're going to go with. He is a woman-hating former bad gypsy. Stereotype of a gypsy. And now he's a helpful but scary ghost.
Subway ghost. Oh.
Oh, the other weird moment that totally took me out. Also a Giles moment when Buffy says that. So basically it is the taunting is just kind of secures her resolve. Like she knows what she says. I know what I have to do now regarding Angel. And Giles looks at her and says, what's that? It's just so weird. Like, okay, so Buffy's the Slayer. What do you think she's thinking? Like, I know what I have to do. What's that? Like, challenge him to a dance-off or take him on a talk show and angrily confront him.
Like, we're going to have a duel outside.
Yeah, we're going to have a duel. I'm going to go steal some pistols and challenge him. Yeah, oh. It's just weird. It's just really, it just takes me out of it. The perfect bliss that I'm in for most of the episode.
Those are good. Not
a lot of dislikes, but noteworthy ones.
They were pretty noteworthy. All right. So not only did we watch this episode several times for all of you, we also, this episode was novelized in the book The Angel Chronicles, Volume 3, written by Nancy Holder. So we also read the novelization for everyone. There were some things that we wanted to point out for all of you.
Yeah, it's an interesting read, for sure.
It is. Do you want to go through your stuff first?
The interesting thing is I got the book, like, just a few days ago, right before we, you know, started getting our notes together. So I'm like, oh, I must get it. This is perfect. One thing I've always been kind of interested in learning is what the characters, like what's going on in their heads when certain things are happening. So I was super excited about that. I think that would be, I thought that would be a lot of fun in theory. Knowing what the characters are thinking kind of ended up being depressing, maddening,
gross.
Gross. So many emotions.
Yeah.
Not good ones for the most part.
We're not discouraging anyone from reading it. Like, it's definitely worth a read.
Yeah, definitely pick it up. You can get it for what? Like $8 on Amazon, I think?
Yeah, it's like $9.99 on Kindle.
I got mine for $2.
Ooh.
And it had like a nice layer of dust, like rash inducing. This book has not been open in forever. But I like to think it came with my very own dusted vampire kind of add-on. This isn't grime and dirt. And
it's vampire dust.
Dusted.
Oh, yeah, man.
Lot of good stuff. We find out that for all you creepers who are interested as you're watching the episodes thinking, I wonder what Buffy smells like. Well, we have the answer. Buffy is a vanilla scented perfume kind of gal, which is kind of weird. I don't really picture her as vanilla.
I don't either. I wonder why. Yeah. Or like flowers or something.
Yeah. Something other than vanilla.
Vanilla seems so plain.
Yeah. Buffy's just not a vanilla kind of gal. So no. I digress, Ms. Nancy Holder.
We love you, Nancy.
We love you, Nancy, but I'm making a list. And number one is Buffy does not wear vanilla scented perfume.
Okay, so the next one. There are scenes after Angel goes to the factory and sees Spike and Drusilla for the first time, where he has very lustful thoughts about Drusilla. I think one of the quotes is something along the lines of, yeah, I'm going to be on that ASAP. And I shuddered, like physically shuddered and went, ugh. And yeah, it's like every time he sees her, there's like a lustful.
Yeah, regardless of what's happening in the scene, like, I mean, it doesn't have to be their like playful banter, flirting stuff that they do occasionally. It can be like, I don't know. They could be murdering someone and Angel is thinking about how much he wants to bang Drusilla.
Yes.
It's just really weird.
And it was like the part where she goes, we'll feed and we'll play. She like moves over to Spike and like does her little growl thing at him, and in the book she thinks I'm still yours mostly. And I'm just like, there's some weird stuff that's gonna be happening here later.
Yeah, she makes it a bit extra, I guess you could say.
She really does. I just, like I said, visibly like shuddered and went whoa a couple of times.
Nancy Holder is kind of a sex fiend.
She is.
She, like, throughout the whole book, everyone's wanting to have sex, like, all the time.
All the time. And that's what I was telling you. Like, I don't know if it's because I'm older now, whereas I'm not 17 anymore, and that's not all I think about. But I'm just like, is that all they really think about?
Apparently. What happened to, let's have a good conversation.
Yeah. So.
We're getting old.
I guess so.
There is an amazing moment and just super weird that we both, I think, had to read it a couple of times, where Spike is kind of bitter and resentful that the judge is basically lazy and, you know, not incinerating everyone, and is sitting around the factory eating his crisps.
Oh man. I was very confused. I was like, did I read this right?
Me, I was thinking, like, really? Is this like, is this a figure of speech eating all my crisps? I don't understand.
It's like the first paragraph of the book.
Is there some deep philosophical question that's being posed here?
About eating crisps?
What are crisps a metaphor for? Oh, man.
So then the other thing that we talked about was Cordelia and Xander, their banter always seemed playful, right? Like flirty type of things. Yeah. But if you read the novelization, they hurt each other's feelings a lot.
Yeah, that's probably one of the like big things that, as we said, everyone read it. But I came away from it thinking, like, I don't know, just kind of depressed.
Yeah.
Because I've always really liked their playful banter that they have. Even if it's like clearly insulting each other, they go back and forth. So you kind of think, oh, how fun. No, it's not fun. I kind of came away thinking that this is just toxic and abusive. Yes. For both of them, and they are terrible for each other.
Toxic was the word that came to my mind too.
Ugh, rough. And like that moment where Cordelia like feels ashamed after Xander.
I know.
Ugh, that's some rough stuff in that book.
This was a rough read. Again, read it. Come to your own conclusions. You may love it.
Oh,
and then the other thing, is so Xander tells Cordelia to change into something trashier, and then I didn't think she was dressed that trashy to begin with.
Sorry, choked on my coffee there.
So he tells her to change into something trashier and meet at Willow's in half an hour. But then we see Buffy go to sleep, and it's the next day, and then they go to the armory. So the original explanation was, what, that they just went to like get their plan together? Is that what Joss said?
I think Joss said that, yeah, they were just formulating the plan and doing a run through.
So in the book, the explanation on why they go to the armory the next day is that Oz's van was broken down and in the shop, which is a better explanation.
Yeah, simple. And I actually think it's a good explanation.
I also do.
That moment really stands out, like, meet in 30 minutes. And so there, Joss's explanation of it's you know, they're just planning it. It doesn't make sense because what? Like Xander wants to have final approval on the trashiness of Cordelia's outfit?
And if everything's like, gonna fit in Oz's van?
Yeah, and he tells her, go get changed and meet in 30 minutes.
Right.
Yeah, just doesn't make sense.
It does not make sense.
Oh, yikes. Crisps.
What else do we have about we have some more stuff about the novel.
One thing that I did like is that they have an explanation of, so at the beginning of the episode, end of the last one, then it carries over to the beginning of this one, when Angel is losing his soul, he wakes up and rushes outside only to then start screaming for Buffy, like right outside the door.
Yeah.
Which I always thought was kind of weird. Like, why did he even leave?
Right.
I know he's like you know, in pain and all that, but he like stumbled his way outside. It doesn't make sense. The book explains it pretty well that his reason for rushing out quickly is that as soon as he starts losing his soul, he's aware of what's happening. So his initial thought is that he needs to get as far away from Buffy as possible. And then the reason he starts screaming her name once he's outside is basically that's his kind of last ditch effort to hang on to his soul, is thinking of Buffy, which causes him to scream her name. which I think is a good explanation,
though. I agree with that. I like that explanation a lot.
And his thoughts are, as he's changing,
are
super intense.
Yeah, they are.
He describes it as a couple different ways. One of them is that he feels like he's witnessing his own beheading. It's like, ugh. Harsh.
That is kind of harsh. I was thinking about how he was saying, oh, my love, my darling, my Buffy.
So tragic.
Very tragic. Okay, so the other thing that really upset me in the book was, so when Xander and Willow have their confrontation out in the hallway, before, like, as she runs off or whatever, like, she says, it just means that you'd rather be with someone you hate than be with me. And then she leaves. And Xander's thoughts are terrible. He thinks
they are.
It's something along the lines of, she's not wrong or something like that. And I was just like, crap.
Yeah. As I'm reading, I'm thinking, like, what was she like? What was she thinking? Like, how can we make Xander a bigger jerk?
Right.
Oh, I know. Let's have him be awful and then confirming that he's awful in his head, but not really feeling bad about
It was so awful for me to read that. Like, I had to read it a couple of times. Like, did I really just read that?
Yeah. So Cordelia's, you know, like, oh, you wouldn't die for me, or no one would ever die for me. And Xander's thinking, like, yeah, she's right.
Yeah.
Just harsh.
Yeah.
Run away, Cordelia. Call a hotline.
If you know what's good for you.
This relationship is no good.
Yeah. Anything else on the book?
Oh, yeah. Another, we talked about earlier, you know, Cordelia being absolute trash, according to Xander. The worst person ever. Despicable scum. The description. So Cordelia's trashy attire, or trashier, as Xander so eloquently tells her. Not super trashy.
No.
In the episode or the book. And so here's the novelization's description of Cordelia's trashy scum of the earth attire. Metallic headband, dangly earrings, silver jacket, tight black pants, and black gloves. And she's also wearing a silk flower blouse. So that's Cordelia's trashy attire?
It's really not that trashy.
She's looked trashier, folks.
Sorry, totally. Cordelia.
But yeah, after that, like, super boring vanilla description of her attire, Xander's thought is kinky.
So creepy.
So freaking weird.
Yeah. That whole relationship is and then the last thing that we have on the book stuff is the part in the library when Xander tells Cordelia tells Willow that he needs Cordelia for the plan, but that he may need a bigger vehicle. And she's like, oh, no problem, I'll get Oz. And maybe you can explain this one a little better.
Yeah. So in the episode, they can't use Cordelia's car because, like you said, they need something bigger. And Willow says, Oz has a van. Now, watching the episode, I got the impression that she's saying it kind of like, oh, well, look, the guy that I'm interested in is super helpful and Cordelia's not.
Right.
That's kind of how I took it. In the book, that's not how it plays out at all, apparently.
No.
And I actually have, I have the book, the lines. So it says, "It might need to be bigger," Xander looked again at Willow. She was steely-eyed. "No problem. I'll get Oz. He has a van." That information and the harsh way she delivered it was not lost on Xander. It wasn't that he had a van. It was what they could do inside a van.
Oh my God.
She was putting him on notice that she was moving on.
And I mean, kudos for moving on. But I do not think that that was the intention.
Yes.
Behind the statement.
Saucy Ms. Nancy Holder, who has sex on the brain all the time, apparently. It just doesn't make sense.
Our Willow's not a slut.
Willow's not a promiscuous gal.
No. She's a cute little Willow.
Yeah, and her like shot back at Xander, like getting back at him is, oh, you're kissing Cordelia, so I'm gonna go have sex in a guy's van who I barely know.
Yeah.
Oh, creepy.
Not what I got from that scene at all.
Yeah.
And reading it in the book again, I had to read it a couple of times.
Apparently we are wrong and have been corrected, and Willow is a promiscuous gal.
So the next episode is Phases, and that is novelized in one of the Willow books. So I'm going to be reading that one for next week, and we'll see if this other writer, I think it's Yvonne Navarro, I said, has different thought processes for the characters.
See if she's as focused on sex as Miss Saucy Nancy Holder.
Yeah, we shall see.
It's going to be so amazing if you're reading it. And spoiler alert, there could be a werewolf, maybe.
Yep.
In the book. Willow's thoughts are like kinky every time she sees the werewolf. Kinky.
Kinky werewolf. Ugh.
Sex with Oz in the van. What was she thinking?
I have no idea. Did she run this past Joss?
Who approved this?
Nancy, I'm looking at you. She's actually very nice.
Write in. Let us know, Nancy. What were you thinking? Was it an off day? Or perhaps she has inside knowledge that we're not aware of.
She very well may. I'm not going to discount that. That's like maybe I'm Joss saying. Did you talk to Joss?
Yeah, maybe Joss told her, like, everyone has it wrong. You're right. Willow is a wanton harlot.
She is a sex fiend.
And no one else gets it.
Oh. So again, we definitely encourage you to read the book if you're into that kind of thing. That book also has Surprise and what else?
Surprise, Innocence, and Passion.
Passion. So yeah, that's coming up too. So we will definitely read that as well. Because I'm sure Nancy has some passionate things for Passion.
Oh, I can't wait to read what Saucy Sexy Adventures
our Slayer is going to get up to.
Yeah, our Slayer is going to be, yikes.
So there's some firsts in this episode. So this is the first time we see Angel as Angelus. And that is actually the proper way to say Angelus is, and not Angelus, as Joss so pointed out in the commentary.
Angelus.
This is also the first time we see Angel in the sunlight in a dream. The first time someone catches Cordy and Xander kissing. The first time we see the military base.
Grr. I'm shaking. No one can see me right now, but I'm literally shaking my fist.
I knew you were going to say that.
Town is out of control.
This is the first time Oz helps out the Scoobies.
Yay!
Hooray! This is the first time we see Oz's blue van, which he'll be keeping throughout the remainder of the show. And this is the first time we hear Willie called Willie the Snitch.
Oz better not be having sex with our innocent Willow in that van.
True.
Ugh.
No groupies in the van, Oz.
No groupies. Now that we've sex shamed poor Willow.
And then something else. This is also in the Angel Collection DVD. This episode is.
Good episode for the collection.
I agree. What else?
Should we... How about a rundown of characters?
Yes.
All right. So do you want me to go first?
Yep, you go first.
So normally, if you're a frequent listener, as you're aware, we just kind of throw some stuff out of, you know, moments from the various characters. Since so much is going on in this episode, we thought it'd be easier to kind of do a rundown character by character. What we liked, what we didn't, what's, you know, what stuck out. So first up, Buffy. Hooray! Buffy is freaking awesome in this episode.
Yes.
The crying scene. I'm not ashamed to admit, freaking man tears every time I watch it. It's just so a tough scene.
She brings it.
But yeah, once she does, just amazingly well. I love the moment where she confronts Ms. Calendar.
Yes.
Slams her on the desk. I watched that maybe four or five times before someone angrily suggested, stop rewinding that. Move on. I can't see that scene.
I love that you said angrily suggested.
Yeah, I just played it over and over again. It's amazing. The music when she's like storming down the hallway and like, you know, she's super pissed off because she didn't even take the time to like put a bra on before she goes to slam her. Just love it. How terrifying for those classmates, though. Can you imagine being in school and one of your classmates is just slamming a teacher on the desk?
Should I go get the principal? Is he even there?
Yeah, where's freaking Snyder? This is the perfect time for, instead of maybe wagging his finger that Buffy's not participating in like the science fair, maybe let's call attention to that she's assaulting staff members. But yeah, apparently he's busy this week again.
So I love Buffy in this episode. Like, Sarah's acting is on point.
Yeah, total tragedy that they didn't get more kudos awards for the work they did.
I agree. She was really slighted there. I couldn't think of the word I wanted to use.
Good crier.
Totally good crier. She brings me to tears every time.
Yeah, smells like vanilla. What about Angel? What do we think?
I hate that he's so bad, but he's so good at being bad.
Absolutely. My thing is that I like Angel. I like he and Buffy together, but is it kind of scandalous to say that he can be a bit boring at times?
Yeah, when we talked about this a little bit, like the soul, I feel... A good word for me to use is muted. It mutes his personality.
Yeah, absolutely. He's so much more interesting as a villain.
I totally agree with that. And it's like, I don't know if it's because of the soul that he feels muted to me. Because, I mean, we'll see, you know, not to spoil anything, but we will see flashbacks of him pre-vampire as a human. And he doesn't seem that... You know what I mean? He's not like all broody and mopey.
Is it just me or is he always dirty in the flashbacks?
He is. Really, yeah. He is always dirty.
I mean, I guess they didn't have plumbing. Still dirty.
Yeah. I really like him as a villain. I hate it, though, because, like, I have said this before. I will say it again, and I apologize to everyone out there who loves Spike and Riley. It is me, and I ship Buffy and Angel forever.
They're amazing together, you know, except for the death and tragedy yeah. and tears. And
they could never have sex again after this.
Very tragic.
So yeah, good character all around in this episode.
Oh, and is it bad? Maybe I shouldn't really put this in the pro category, but is it like wrong to think like, oh, he looks really cool when he smokes? Maybe I shouldn't like advocate for that, but
he does look cool. But it was just funny how like he becomes bad and then they put a cigarette in his mouth. And I'm just sort of like, that's the key indicator for in case you didn't know, he's bad.
He's bad or yeah, no smoking in Sunnydale. You are either bad or going to be killed.
Yeah. It was I just found that really funny.
I want to be cool like Angel when I smoke.
Where like if you like are just watching this episode in passing and see Angel, you'd be like, oh, that guy's bad. He's smoking a cigarette.
What are you watching? Oh, just Buffy. Villain. Yeah. That guy's smoking. Oh, the poor prostitute.
Yeah.
How weird that freaking Sunny. I'm just obsessed with. I'm scandalized by all the amazing things in Sunnydale at this point, but how weird that there are prostitutes running around in Sunnydale too.
And what was she doing in that alley? Who was she hoping to hook up with?
Yeah, like just it's raining and
she wasn't dressed very well.
It's weird. Like, so she is, yeah. So she's a prostitute that is not dressed like a prostitute.
Yeah.
She's kind of dressed like maybe she's Buffy's math teacher and just moonlights as a prostitute.
She has to pick up a second job because teaching doesn't pay well.
Yeah, super. It's like a leather jacket. She looks professional.
Yeah.
But she smokes, so we know she is a wanton woman.
Yes.
Oh, yikes. Willow. What about Willow?
Willow was pretty badass in this episode.
This was an awesome one for her.
It was. I was heartbroken for her that she found Xander and Cordelia kissing, but the fact that she kind of let Xander have it in the hallway twice.
Yeah.
Was awesome. And then her being so forward with Oz in the van, like, do you want to make out with me? I found that whole thing was everything to do with Willow in this episode was awesome.
And then she says, what about have sex with me in this van? Because I like sex in vans with people I don't know. Nancy.
I know we just met, but my boyfriend has this van.
I'm always going to be thinking during that scene.
I know.
Now, which I love. Too. It's ruined. You've ruined it, Nancy.
Oh.
But yeah, Willow, amazing. I like that how she kind of gets it throughout the episode.
Yeah.
I think is the easiest way to describe it. She knows like the perfect time to tell Giles to shut yeah. up and not press. Yeah, just super awesome, supportive. Good episode for Willow.
She's very, yeah, like she's super supportive of Buffy in this episode. Like just the... What? Like, we should just leave her alone.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And she's just, I think this episode, which we've seen, you know, before in the prior episodes, but this one kind of hammers it in that Willow is a loyal, just all around wonderful friend
yeah.
that you want to have. She's a good person.
She really is.
What about Cordelia?
Cordelia had some good moments in this episode. I think one of my favorite Cordelia lines in this episode is after Xander says that he has a plan, and she's like, "Oh, and here's a lower place."
And then Xander's thoughts are like, just something
yeah,
awful.
Just something completely terrible. So not a great Cordelia episode. We really didn't see her too terribly much. But like, I think she got some good character development out of it, and she's proving herself to be more a part of the Scoobies than in the past.
I think I'm going to have trouble now watching the episodes, and like when they're going back and forth, Xander and Cordelia, I'm going to have to completely ignore the book.
Yeah. So you don't realize that they're hurting each other's feelings.
Tragedy. Yeah. Speaking of tragedy, Xander, awful yes. in this episode. It's getting harder and harder to like him at all.
I know he gets a bad rap, and he does have some redeemable qualities about himself later. I just feel like season two is not a great season for Xander. Yeah. So he starts off this episode like rip roaring to go to save Buffy. And then by the time it comes time for Buffy to call and check in to see if anybody's heard from Angel, he's like super dismissive about it. And like, oh, say hi from me.
Yeah, the thing that drives me nuts is I kind of get, like, I understand the defense where it's like, oh, well, he has feelings for Buffy, so of course he's gonna be happy that, you know, things aren't working out necessarily. Right. In theory, I get the defense, but he seems almost like gleeful and super thrilled whenever she's just miserable. Yeah.
Terrible person.
Boo to Xander. The good thing that I like in this episode is the inclusion of him retaining the military knowledge, though. I think it's a good way to, you know, Xander doesn't have superpowers. He doesn't have magic. He's not super smart and bookish. But, you know, it's a good way to kind of give him something to do or make him useful.
I agree. Yeah, it adds something to his character that he can kind of bring to the group.
So at least he's got one positive.
Yeah.
I don't know. Maybe I'm being too harsh with Xander. And then the next episode, he'll be absolutely atrocious. And I'll be like, no, I was right. This is the worst person ever. Yikes. Jenny. Jenny's up next.
I kind of feel bad for her.
Me too.
I feel bad for her because I feel like had she really known what would have happened, that she would have told Buffy.
Yeah.
And then she comes in wanting to help, and they're basically like, get out. I felt bad for her then.
Yeah, one thing that I think is kind of interesting is that all it takes sometimes is a single episode where it's just a couple of lines of dialogue to kind of change my opinion. Like last week, weren't we kind of hating Jenny?
We were
pretty in the she's awful category. But I don't know. I really like how she confronts the horrible sex shaming poltergeist uncle.
Mm-hmm.
I love the part where she tells him he's a fool.
Me too.
And as she's going out, she says, we're all fools.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I mean, she tries in this one. I feel bad for her.
I do too. Hopefully she'll be able to redeem herself later to everybody.
So are we thinking that Giles is Giles super like pissed off at her too? Or is he just kind of be supporting of Buffy and telling her to get lost?
I think he's hurt because she lied to him. Lies are never, you know, great for anybody. So yeah. I think he generally is hurt, but I also think that he knows that Buffy needs to focus. And if she's already mad at Jenny, having Jenny there will only be a distraction for her.
How awkward when they're in her class now.
Oh my God. Yeah.
Yikes.
Yeah.
Giles. Giles is up next.
Good episode for Giles.
It is.
The exchange between him and Buffy in the car, again, is what listed as one of my favorite moments. But I think in like it's one of my favorite moments in the entire series.
Yeah. And while I feel bad for Jenny in the moment, I really like that he totally backs Buffy up and says, you know, she said leave, basically.
Yeah.
Other than his two clunky dialogue moments, the rest of his lines were awesome. The like you said, the speech or the kind of back and forth with him and Buffy at the end. Ugh, love it.
Me too.
Specifically where he tells her that he still respects her.
Mm-hmm.
I think was yay, Giles.
Yeah.
Sorry, I was taking a drink of my coffee there. Joyce?
Even though she wasn't in it, this was a pretty good episode for Joyce. The interaction that she had with Buffy in both of the scenes that she was in, like, especially the last scene, like, I felt she was very nurturing, yeah. And it was sort of exactly what Buffy needed at that time, was just to be with her mom.
Yeah, I was thinking, Joyce is the best mother ever.
I know. And like then, 3 episodes ago, we were like, she's the worst.
She's the worst. Someone should report her to child services. She's terrible.
Yeah.
Speaking of Joyce, we have a Buffy bite about her, I think, about this, regarding this episode.
We do. So this is Christine Sutherland, who plays Joyce. This is her favorite episode as a fan. And she said that Joyce being her mother and knowing that something is going on, this is very hard for her, just being there and not asking what it is.
When push comes to shove. Yeah, she has a really awesome mom moment.
Yeah, she does. Even on the stairs, the interaction was, I think, was really good between the two of them.
You know, it's driving her crazy. She's just wanting to tear into her.
Life. I know.
What's going on? Are you doing drugs?
Yeah.
You know, as harsh as she or strict as she is, it's weird that she falls for the round robin. Let's call each other.
Right?
They were staying at each other's house. Really? Buffy's
yeah.
Burning down gyms and fighting and...
You're okay being, with round robin?
Yeah, just being the worst daughter ever is, you know, your usual opinion. But yeah, it's cool. Go stay at your friend's house. I won't check on that. You're trustworthy.
Yeah.
Joyce, such a complicated lady.
She really is.
Last up, I think, is Spike and Drusilla.
Good episode for Spike and Drew. I think when I was talking about Spike really knowing how much of a pain in the ass that Buffy can be and Angel not realizing it.
Yeah.
I really like that aspect. It's going to be interesting to see how this whole thing with this love triangle, if you will, between Spike and Drusilla. And
the
Angel.
Trio.
Yeah, it's gonna go.
I think I mentioned in the last episode, but I really like the role reversal of Drusilla and Spike. You know, he was always taking care of her, and now it's
yeah.
the complete opposite. Plus, I've always liked Drusilla more than Spike.
I do too. She's crazy, and I love it.
It's a good... A good reversal for them. She gets the spotlight for a bit.
I have a quick Buffy bite. Originally, Angelus was going to kill off Spike so he could have Drusilla to himself. But because Spike had become so popular and with the fans, they decided to keep him around for a while.
Awesome. I remember when I went to the convention and met James Marsters.
Mm-hmm.
Another Buffy bite for you, people, is he actually hated the wheelchair. And as we've mentioned, maybe once or twice, Buffy didn't have a large budget at the time. So James Marsters' idea was So I'm always in this wheelchair that I hate filming in. Maybe I can kind of sabotage the wheelchair and bank on them not replacing it because we don't have the money to replace it. So he literally damaged the wheelchair. He dented one of the wheels and was all excited. Like, yeah, now they're going to write me as being like, hey, I'm cured. I'm healthy again. No, they totally made him use the broken wheelchair. And he said he was kicking himself because in every scene from here on out, he struggles to push the wheelchair and they would not fix it or replace it for him. So now he's just in a busted wheelchair.
That's funny. That backfired on him.
Oh, man. That's awesome.
That is awesome.
You know they were just doing it to be horrible.
Probably.
You broke it, you have to use it.
Yeah. You broke it, you buy it.
Poor Spike.
Let's see. Oh, another Buffy bite. Filming had to stop for almost half an hour while Sarah composed herself after collapsing onto the bed, sobbing.
Boo, poor Sarah. Or actually, awesome Sarah, poor Buffy.
True.
Rough episode for her.
It really was.
What about some alt titles? So our alt titles, which we love in Finland, this episode is entitled Angel or Demon.
Which, that's a good one.
Get behind that one. And as always, our wonderful, never fails to impress us, the Germans. The episode is entitled The Fallen Angel.
Ooh.
I actually really like that one. I think we could have gone with that title.
I agree. I like that one a lot. Go Germans.
The Fallen Angel.
Nice. Did you have stats?
I do. So I have some. I thought people would be curious in a Angelus Buffy matchup. Who would win? As we can see, Buffy this week. Angel's stats are pretty impressive when he becomes Angelus. So his strength, he is at an 8. Buffy's at a 7. So yeah.
Okay.
Angel's stronger than her, which really surprised me.
He must have been holding back.
Yeah. I think that's actually what it mentions in the book is pretty spot on that. He is holding back and losing the soul. It just, you know, he doesn't care anymore. So
yeah,
he gets a bump in a lot of them. Our dexterity is Angel's at a 6, or Angelus is at a 6. Buffy's at a 6. So they're pretty equally matched in their doing flips and all that fun stuff. Constitution, Angelus at a 6, Buffy's at a 6, intelligence 3, perception, that as a reminder, that governs our 5 senses, basically how aware you are, your ability to spot clues. They're both at a 4, which I thought was kind of interesting because a lot of times they make Buffy seem not dumb,
right,
but just kind of not aware,
right.
Willpower, that's our mental strength, resisting fear, resisting temptation. Angelus is surprisingly higher than hers. He's at a 5. And she's at a 4, which seemed kind of weird to me because resist temptation.
Yeah,
I guess it's because she's a woman. You know how those women are.
Oh, I know.
Attractiveness. They're both at a +3, which puts them at model good looks.
Yep, I would agree with that.
I could see it. They both got it going on.
Yeah.
The other surprising one was Angelus has a higher kung fu level. So basically martial arts. which I think is kind of weird because he doesn't really use martial arts a lot.
No.
Does he? He is currently at an 8 and Buffy's at a 6.
I wonder if it's just because he's been around longer.
Yeah, maybe studied a bit more.
Yeah.
I guess later on we see him doing, is it Tai Chi?
Yes.
Maybe that's his bump.
Yeah.
All right, what else do we have?
Okay, so we watched the commentary, and Joss had a lot of good stuff that he noted in the episode. I don't think it was as good as the Marty Noxon commentary that you had said that you watched. He didn't do a whole lot of behind-the-scenes stuff. So a couple of things I thought were really interesting was the scene between Buffy and Angel in the bedroom was actually meant to be shot outside of Buffy's house. As she goes up to her door and then she leaves, Joss said that they tried to shoot it, but it just was not working out. And he realized about halfway through that it needed to be shot in the place where they had made love so that it would be more intimate, and that he was uncomfortable with how well he was writing Angelus at being so cruel. And Sarah was completely disappointed that it didn't work outside the house, and she thought everything was all her fault. So they ended up reshooting it in the bedroom, and it went much better. So to coincide with that, the night that they shot the Giles Buffy scene in his car was the same night they tried to film that. And it was, he said it was easy for Sarah to bring that emotion and to bring the tears because she was so disappointed that the shot for her and Angel didn't work.
That's an awesome reveal. And that explains a lot, because did you notice in the episode where there's a couple of times where Buffy references, like, saw him at the house, And I was thinking, like, does she mean his apartment, or is she just calling it a house?
Yeah.
So interesting.
Yeah, I thought that was probably my favorite thing I took away from the commentary. The next favorite thing I took away from the commentary was that this was Joss's first time filming a sex scene, and he was super uncomfortable. So the dream that Buffy has later on, dreaming about her and Angel having sex, he said Sarah and David were great. They were like laughing and scratching each other, but he didn't ask them to make any noise because he was too embarrassed. So him and Cindy, the supervising sound editor, were the ones to provide the erotic breathing sounds during the scene because he was too embarrassed to ask Sarah and David to do it.
I'm totally going to view that scene differently.
Yeah, it was. I thought that was funny. And he also said something about how I don't know if it was a lighting supervisor, but they had like a light that they put on a pole that was like rotating, and that's why the light keeps coming around.
Interesting.
Yeah. What else from the commentary? Oh, he also said that he was surprised that the WB let him get away with the "Was it good for you" to writing on the wall.
Curse you, Uncle Enyos. Be gone. Go to Ghost.
Go kick your can.
go kick. That's going to be... I'm going to say that randomly. Go kick your can.
amazing. Yeah. So there's a couple of other things, and I'll just run through them really quick that came from the commentary. So Joss noted that this was an important episode for Buffy in a couple of ways. So this was the new night for Buffy on the WB. They were worried that the ratings wouldn't keep up with the show moving to Tuesdays, but it thrived. And I think it was the WB's number one show.
Yeah, and this one was the most popular episode, right?
Yes, yeah, it had like 8.2 million viewers or something like that.
Hooray, everyone tuned in.
Yeah, and then they said for Joss and company, this show was important because they wanted to showcase how much the show had evolved. They were telling a harder, uglier story than they had in the past. So he said he relied heavily on Sarah and David to kind of carry this episode, but all of the actors could go any place he needed them to go. And he said that he believes that these were the finest actors that he'll ever get to work with.
And they nailed it. This episode is just amazing.
Yeah, this was a great, great episode. Something that surprised me was he said that the scene between Oz and Willow was important because people didn't like Oz in the beginning.
Yeah, which I totally don't get at all.
Me either. I guess the fans wanted Willow to be with Xander. I never wanted that.
Me either.
I won't say never. In When She Was Bad, the ice cream on the nose thing, I was like, oh, kiss, kiss. But then it didn't happen. And then Buffy came back and I thought Xander's never going to get over that. And I really just wanted her to move on. So they wrote this scene specifically to get people on Oz's side and to have people fall in love with Oz right as Willow does.
Which totally floored me because I could usually see like, yeah, I get what you're thinking, but I'm just stunned on, like, what's the reasoning that people didn't like Oz?
That's a good question. If you're out there and you watched season 2 back in the day, why did you not like Oz? I'm very curious to know.
Yeah, I can't really think of, I mean, unless you were just hardcore Xander and Willow.
Yeah.
I mean, he was new. He wasn't in it a lot.
Yeah.
I don't know. I'm kind of grasping for reasoning on that one.
As soon as they introduced Oz and he saw her in the Eskimo costume and Inca Mummy Girl, and he was like, who is that girl? And I was like, yes, please find her. Interact with her. And yeah. Let's get this going.
And the thing that I love about Oz is, I mean, not to harp on Xander too much, but, you know, the common reasoning for, you know, kind of glossing over how atrocious he is that, well, he's a teenage boy, so, you know.
Yeah.
Oz shows us that that is not a good explanation.
No.
Because just because he's a teenage boy doesn't mean he's atrocious.
Now, I was a teen once, and I can tell you a lot of teenage boys are atrocious, but there are some good ones out there.
And just atrocious all the time? I mean,
yeah. And then the last thing from the commentary that I wanted to make note of is the interaction with the judge trying to burn Angelus was to show Spike, Drusilla, and the audience that he was not faking, that he really was bad.
After he ate all of Spike's crisps.
I thought you were going to say after he ate Buffy's math teacher. I thought you were talking about Angel.
Oh, man.
Oh, good times.
Poor Sunnydale staff.
Yeah.
I'm going to think of that as like a canon. Like, it is canon. Buffy's math teacher is killed.
She moonlights as a prostitute. And she was killed by Angel.
When she's stupid enough to smoke, go out for a smoke.
And you know she's bad because she was smoking.
Between grading papers, when she needs a little break.
She has a smoke. Goes looking for love in all the wrong places.
Karma catches up to her. How dare she?
Oh. Anything else?
Can we talk about the rocket launcher?
Yes.
Okay, so the iconic moment in this episode when Buffy uses the rocket launcher to kill the judge, found out it's not a rocket launcher that she uses.
What?
Yeah, totally weird. So I was kind of curious about the specifics on the weapon. So I started off by looking it up and was super surprised that, yeah, it's not even a rocket launcher. So I kind of wanted more details than I could get on searching on my own. So I was thinking, who would know about, is this a rocket launcher or like what's going on with this? Kind of specific knowledge. But luckily I realized, sweet brother-in-law is a artillery specialist.
Ooh.
Retired in the Marines. So he would know about this. So I was sending him text. I sent him like a clip of the scene and a couple of GIFs and you know, basically like, hey, what's going on with this thing? So he sent a lot of technical info that he just knew off the top of his head. The weapon is, the description is unguided, portable, single shot, recoilless rifle.
Okay.
Yeah, which was super surprising. He said definitely not a rocket launcher because it fires a shell, and to be kind of classified as a rocket launcher, it needs to fire a rocket, which is kind of guided on its own.
Mm-hmm.
And that that's not what this weapon does.
Okay.
He also, which I thought was kind of funny thinking about it, he said that he watched the scene and then sent me his text was frowny face and says it's a non-regulation firing position.
Okay.
So he wasn't super thrilled with how Buffy was standing when she fired the recoilless rifle. He said first of all she would have been thrown from the popcorn machine.
Okay.
When she fired it. He said also the fun thing about this recoilless rifle is it has a what's known as a back blast. So basically there's this triangle area behind the weapon when you fire it that is the danger zone, which is exactly where Willow, Xander,
oh, no,
everyone is standing. Yeah, he said if she would have fired it like that, she would have seriously injured or possibly killed all of them.
Yikes.
Yeah. Also added that she wouldn't be able to fire it inside at all. It's not the ideal place for this specific model.
Okay.
Just because she would have injured herself. It has to be, she's too close to the judge when she fires. Yeah, a whole bunch of stuff. Which I thought was kind of neat.
Yeah, interesting.
I know someone that's fired a anti-tank recoilless rifle.
That's awesome.
It also added that it kind of cracked him up that they added a fancy aiming device,
mm-hmm.
For theatrical purposes. I guess it's a night vision scope that they put on there. That not really necessary, but he did agree it looked cool. So
awesome.
There we go.
Okay. So speaking of the rocket launcher deaths this week, we had 3 human deaths. So there was Buffy's math teacher in the alley, bitten and killed by Angel. Uncle Enyos, go kick the can. He was also killed by Angel.
Get off of my train.
And then there was the man at the mall who was killed by the judge. So that brings 3 humans this week. And then we had 1 demon, the judge, who was blown up by Buffy with the rocket launcher. So if no weapon Ford can kill him, like, do we really know if he's dead or not? We don't know if he's dead. So I'm going to read the little excerpt here from Giles' book, if I can find it here really quick, just to talk quickly about the judge. Let me find him here. This is in alphabetical order, but you have to know your alphabet in order to find it quickly. And I don't, apparently. A, B, C, D, E, F, G.
That's okay. Have I ever told you that? That's what people at my job need to do when they file. They have to shout out the alphabet.
Interesting.
Like, really? What are you people going to do if you're like pulled over and you have to say it backwards?
I can't say it forward sometimes, so I'd be really screwed. I'd have to tell them up front, like, I can't do this sober, so. Okay.
Arrest me.
Yeah. I can walk in a straight line, though. Sometimes. According to Angel, this ancient demon was brought to our dimension to separate the wicked from the righteous and burn the righteous down. One may suppose this is a poetic way of saying that the judge was intended to wipe out humanity, and indeed, he could only successfully burn to death targets who were quote-unquote full of feelings, which is a human trait. He singled out Dalton, Spike and Drusilla's vampire lackey, as his first victim. I think the judge would have been able to burn Spike and possibly Drusilla as they were in love, but as they had resurrected him, he was subject to them. This creature was large and blue and had been disassembled, the boxes sent all over the globe. Spike and Drusilla collected the boxes and assembled him. One thing I would like to point out was that the judge could not be killed by any weapon forged. We found a way around that and gave the Slayer a rocket launcher. However, the Slayer's traditional hand-to-hand combat methods are still the most effective. So he must be dead for sure.
Interesting.
Yeah. So we'll leave him.
In the dead category? Dead or defeated? We're going with dead.
Yeah. So that brings our total 36 humans and 51 vampires and demons so far.
Yay, Buffy.
Yeah.
Oh, I feel so bad for her when her math teacher was killed.
I know.
Must be really hard when she goes into math class.
She's going to be devastated at school. All right. Let's do quotes, but we can tell people how to contact us first. Do you want me to go first?
As always, ladies first, because I'm a gentleman. Like
thank
that.
You. Okay, so you can find us on Facebook at To Quote Buffy and at To Quote Buffy Podcast. You can find us on Twitter and Instagram at To Quote Buffy. And you can find us on the web at toquotebuffy.com. And my email address is ac.toquotebuffypodcast@gmail.com.
And as always, jb.toquotebuffypodcast@gmail.com. Alert, Nancy Holden. Alert, alert. You can also email the general podcast, toquotebuffypodcast@gmail.com. You can find our podcast everywhere. Apple Podcasts and Pocket Cast, To Quote Buffy Podcast. Everyone, please subscribe and review.
Please do it.
Do it. Do it.
All right. So we have quotes. Do you want to go first?
Yeah. My quote is the perfect exchange with one of the most awesome characters that everyone else hates except for us.
All right, here we go.
Do you want to make out with me?
What?
Forget it. I'm sorry. Well, do you?
Sometimes when I'm sitting in class, you know, I'm not thinking about class because that would never happen. I think about kissing you, and it's like everything stops. It's like freeze frame. Will I'm kissing you? Oh, I'm not going to kiss you.
What? But freeze frame.
Well, to the casual observer, it would appear that you're trying to make your friend Xander jealous, or even the score, or something. And that's on the empty side. See, in my fantasy, when I'm kissing you, you're kissing me. It's okay. I can wait.
Aww.
How can you not love him?
And then Willow follows it up with, well, if we're not going to kiss, how about we have sex in your van, Oz?
I knew you were going to say that.
Does that sound better?
Oh. So mine this week is an awesome exchange between Cordelia and Xander.
So does looking at guns really make girls want to have sex? That's scary.
Yeah, I guess.
Well, does looking at guns make you want to have sex?
I'm 17. Looking at linoleum makes me want to have sex.
I like that one.
This Ms. Nancy Holder is a bad influence on you.
I guess
so. Now you're focused on the sex.
I am. I was watching this episode, and then that line came on, and I told my husband that was my quote for this week, and he thought that was hilarious. Okay, I think that is going to do it for us this week. Next time is phases.
Yay, phases.
This is a very Willow Oz centric episode coming up.
It's awesome. It's sweet. Stay tuned.
It is. All right. We'll see you guys next time. Bye, everybody.
Bye.
It's not over. I suppose you know that. He'll come after you, particularly. His profile, he's likely to strike out at the things that made him the most human.
You must be so disappointed in me.
No, I'm not.
This is all my fault?
No. I don't believe it is. Do you want me to wag my finger at you and tell you that you acted rashly? You did, and I can. I know that you loved him. And he has proven more than once that he loved you. You couldn't have known what would happen. The coming months are going to be hard. I suspect on all of us. But if it's guilt you're looking for, Buffy, I'm not your man. All you will get from me is my support. And my respect.
Yeah, baby.